I didn't even realize I was wasting $415 a month until I downloaded Rocket Money. I thought I had my finances under control until the app laid out all my spending and categorized it for me. Takeout, shopping, and unused subscriptions were quietly draining my account. And as a result, my savings took a back seat. But Rocket Money doesn't just tell you what you're wasting money on. It takes action to save you money. First, the app looks at your income and monthly expenses and calculates how much you can safely spend each day to stay under budget. Rocket Money also finds and cancels unwanted subscriptions for you and even negotiates better rates on your bills so you have more money in your pocket. On average, Rocket Money members can save up to $740 a year when using all the app's premium features. Users love the app with over 186,000 five-star ratings. It's time to simplify your finances and take control of your money. Go to rocketmoney.com/cancel to get started. That's rocketmoney.com/cancel. rocketmoney.com/cancel.
Whether it's slots or live dealers, SpinQuest.com has the fun and action you're looking for with SpinQuest exclusives, blackjack, roulette, baccarat, and even live dice with craps and bubble craps. The games never stop, so you don't have to. And right now, new users get $30 coin packs for just $10. Play now at SpinQuest.com.
SpinQuest is a free-to-play social casino. Void where prohibited. Visit SpinQuest.com for more details.
Hi, guys. Welcome to Goodish Girls. My name is Dallas.
I'm Madison.
What are you reading this week?
Ooh, what am I reading this week? I just finished The Queen of Nothing, which is the third installment in the Cruel Prince series. And I just finished How the King of Elfame Learned to Hate Stories, which is essentially like little short stories. It's essentially kind of like a storybook, which is really, really cute. But it's essentially these short stories through Cardin's perspective, which I think was really, really interesting. So right
now, is
that
the man that you're still mad at?
We're not mad anymore.
Oh, okay. We're over
we're
it.
Not
yes.
mad anymore.
Perfect. We hated him last week. Now we're over it. He has redeemed himself.
He has redeemed himself. He's still a child. Because there's like one thing he did. And he was like, it was essentially like a riddle. And he's like, you had the answer all along. And I was like, that is so stupid. Like, what do you mean?
He is the character in a Sabrina Carpenter song.
Ugh, again, this is why last week I said I needed Dorian. I needed a prince with a fully That's developed fair. Prefrontal cortex.
As we all do. Yes.
But we're not agreed. Mad at Cardin anymore. He's just misunderstood baby boy.
Baby boy. Oh my God. Okay. Good job, Cardin. You'll figure it out eventually in your life. I've already read it, but I'm listening to The Blood of Hercules this week. And loving it all over again. It's literally one of my favorite books.
It keeps staring at me every time I go to the bookstore.
It's you should buy it.
Me. And literally, I think the last time I went to a bookstore, there were three different copies. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, but then which one do I buy?
I would look at what the next, because Bonds of Hercules comes out in the next couple of months. Mm-hmm. I would look at what that looks like and then choose your Blood of Hercules, so that way they match, so we can get the same special editions. I want them all. I want one in every color. If I like it, I'll just buy it another color.
I used to be to where I was like, why would anyone want the same, like, same book twice? And then one day I went to Barnes & Noble and I saw this special edition of Love Hypothesis, and I was like, you know what? I get it. Because I'm not a fan of hardcovers, but it has art on the inside.
Mm-hmm. I love when there's character on the inside.
And then look at these science sprayed edges. It makes my little stem heart happy.
Yes, that's so cute. I love a hardback book.
See, I'm more of a paperback girly.
Yeah, hardback cover for me for sure.
I like the flop.
Alyssa and I had talked about this like in our Quicksilver episodes. Like one time I borrowed I want to say it was Akamath or something like that. One of the books in the Akatar series, and it was Cassidy's, and I bent the spine. I didn't know what that was. I'm sorry. I'm sorry. I know. She has forgiven me. I didn't know. Now I know. But if it's a hardcover, then I don't bend the spine.
This is true.
It's tough. I am tough girly. I need tough books.
You want to know something chaotic and just completely 100% diabolical?
Yes.
So there's a book that I wanted to read. It's called A Night in the Garden of Good and Evil. It's essentially about the ghost stories in Savannah. And my brother-in-law and sister live in Savannah. So I wanted to like read it. That way I could know the stories because it's based off of real places. And there's like an actual Garden of Good and Evil in Savannah. I didn't buy the book because I was on a book buying ban. My brother-in-law did. He started reading this book. It's a paperback. I'm not going to do it, but I'll mime it. When he started reading, he full on, like, this is the front page, like, curls it to where it's wrapping around itself. And I was in so much pain watching it. I was like, you are never borrowing any of my books.
Absolutely not. I did not do that.
Straight to jail.
straight to jail. No trial.
I'm calling the 33rd.
Goodbye. Ugh, I hate it. That makes me cringe. Ew. I can't. Well, guys, let's jump into it. We are still deep diving Crescent City, House of Earth and Blood. So if you are just joining us on this episode, I do recommend that you go back and listen to our previous episodes. We are doing this a little bit differently. We are deep diving it, but we understand that with the Crescent City series, sometimes it can be a little bit intimidating to start. Maybe you have heard through the internet grapevine that it is not a good series, that it is not a good book, or maybe you started it and the houses were a little overwhelming. I want to put all of that to bed. I want to put all of that to rest, and I want to give you a guided tour through Crescent City. So each week we are covering a certain set of chapters. If you have read up to those chapters, you are safe with us, okay? We're not going to spoil anything in the first half of the episode. We are going to just cover what is happening in those chapters specifically, but we are going to tell you like things that are to remember, right? Moments that you need to keep in mind, characters that you need to care about and remember. And then we'll also tell you characters that are important, but not really, because we understand that this book is a lot of depth, is a lot of characters, is a lot of places, and we don't want you to get overwhelmed. We want you to enjoy this series just as much as we do. So hang out with us for your guided tour of Crescent City. However, at the end, towards the end of this episode, we will give you a big fat warning that we are then jumping into the House of Theories and Lore, where we will be talking about all things spoilers, all things theories, and connecting the dots between not only Crescent City, but the entire Massverse. So you can join us there if you would like to, or once you finish the Crescent City series, come back and listen to those halves of the episodes. Let's get into it.
I'm so excited because I've been sitting on a theory for so long.
She's been waiting. It's your time to shine. Yay. Okay, so this week, chapters 20 through 26. In chapter 20, we start out with a really strong quote. Look to where it hurts the most. And this is from the Viper Queen. And she mentioned this in the last chapter as well. This is what the Viper Queen says to Bryce and Hunt in their search for the killer of Maximus Tertian and the Pack of Devils. Okay. Hunt didn't really take this quote to heart, but Bryce did. We know that she made a list of suspects as Hunt had asked, but he forgot to ask again for the second list, which was the list of places Danica was before she died. As Bryce attempted to find any other clues, such as searching through previous emails between her and Maximus, which she mentioned there are over 100, and I think that is wild. That is so many emails. First of all, that's too many between one person. It's wild. So I was like, what do you have to say? I can't
handle the little notification bubbles that are like on the top of apps. Like, yes. Even do I use Facebook? Hardly. But if I see like a little notification, I'll just like click on the app just to get rid of the thing.
Yeah. And you know what I can imagine it was, knowing like who Maximus Tertian was, is that he spam emailed her.
Oh, 100%.
Like, it was an email and then he's like, oh, actually. And then I want to add another thing. And Bryce, actually. And she's like, okay, got it. Like, what? Like, straight. And he probably has like 12 responses and she has like one. That would be, I would bet money that that's what that looked like. He just seems like that kind of guy that's like, actually, I have one more thing to say that really doesn't matter, but I'm going to tell you anyways.
Ugh.
Ugh. So, again, over 100 emails. It's not really important in the series. I just wanted to point it out. So, she, during this time, is attempting to look at anything but the truth in front of her, which is that she really can't make the list because she doesn't really remember what happened. Or maybe she remembers it is not comfortable thinking about it. Because this was a really hard time for her, right? Yeah. She was on a lot of drugs during this time, right? She was partying, having fun, living her life. And that was a pretty traumatic thing that happened, obviously. It literally broke her. So I'm not surprised that she is wanting to really not think about it. Also, I want to talk about something that has nothing to do with a murder, but I just want to talk about La Haba because we can, and I love her.
Ugh, so as you should.
Her obsession, La Haba's obsession with Hunt is literally so cute. We agree with you, La Haba. She says that Hunt would fit in on her favorite TV show, Fangs and Bangs.
Okay, and I agree. Question. If Hunt was in our world, what reality TV show do you think he would be on?
Oh my God, Madison, I have something to tell you.
Yeah?
I don't watch reality TV.
You want to know something crazy?
I know. What?
I also don't watch reality TV. Oh my God. I live vicariously through clips.
I lived vicariously through all of the girls at work. We're at lunch and they try to explain to me, they're like, love is blind. And I'm like, they're in bubbles? What does that mean? Why are they not seeing each other? And they're like, that's the point. And they may get married. I'm like, but they don't know each other.
I did go through a phase only because it was like a very hot topic in my molecular bio lab where everyone was obsessed with the Bachelor at the time. Either Bachelor or Bachelorette. And so it's like, okay, I'll bite. Like, there's nothing else going on. It was during COVID. Mm-hmm. And so I watched that. And I think it would be hilarious for Hunt to be on The Bachelor, because I think he would just panic. He'd be like, Isaiah, help.
Yeah,
I need backup.
Like, these girls are all terrible.
Yeah.
I hate them. Yes. I think he would be on like Survivor or like something wild like that. Like it wouldn't 100%. Be with dating. I think he would do a good job. I want to say in another life, Hunt could be like a cowboy. So he could be on like, you know what TV show I do watch? Cowboy Wants a Wife.
I didn't know that was a thing.
It's a thing. It's amazing. It's where these cowboys, like, they pick all these girls that they think are cute, right? And then they go on little mini, like, rapid-fire dates. And then they have to pick, I think, like, 8 of them or something like that to come back and live on the farm with the cowboy. And he lives outside in a camper, and they live in the house, right? So it's, like, separate.
Oh, that's nice.
And it's not like with The Bachelor or with these other reality shows, nothing to – dish on them. If you love these shows, it's fine. I don't watch them, but like nothing weird happens. It's all them working on the farm, learning farm life to see if it's something that they could want forever, to be like his wife and be like a part of the family business. And so some of them are like, this is not for me, actually. I realize that. And some of them are like, I love this. Like I could be on this tractor all day long. And they have to like build, they have to like put up fences for the cattle, and they have to like brand them and all these crazy things, and they all get to go on dates and things like that. And I watched that reality show and I would like to think that Hunt would be on that, but I don't know if that's right, but that's my fantasy.
That I love it. Of almost sounds like The Bachelor, except just farming.
Yes, more modest, pretty much. There's no roses though.
That's true. Oh my gosh, could you imagine? He just has like a basket of chickens. It's like, will you take this chicken?
Oh my God. But they would only be silkies.
Okay, not gonna lie, I don't know. Is silkies the ones that have like the
fluffy ones?
That have like the fluffy feet too?
Yes, they're all fluffy.
Those are mean. What? My friend, or at least maybe it was the chickens that my friend had growing up, but I think they were silkies. She had like this one group of chickens that were like so mean, and she's like, don't get around them because they will chase you and they will like start pecking at your
ankles. I think maybe those are just her chickens. I have lots of silkies. I have a whole flock.
Interesting.
You guys didn't know that about me. I have a lot of chickens and I love them. And my daughter shows them in the fair.
Aww.
They're all named. We at work voted on their names. They are types of chips. Cheeto.
That's
Dorito.
Fun.
Sour cream and onion. There's one chicken, though, that is named Nightmare Moon. My daughter named that. She is sometimes a nightmare, so it's very fitting.
It's Nightmare Moon?
Yes. I don't know if it's one word or two words. I couldn't tell you. That is her name.
I vibe with it.
She is not a pretty silky. I don't know where she came from.
Maybe that's why she's a nightmare.
She is so spicy. But I will tell you what, though. She is a good mom.
Aww.
She takes care of her babies, and she makes sure none of the other chickens are mean to her babies, so she is a good mother. She gets that.
I'd love to see it.
So there's a fun fact about me. However, back to it. All right. As Bryce is making Lahaba feel so embarrassed about thinking Hunt is cute and talking about the Fangs and Bangs show, she gets a call from Jessaba. Jessaba is watching on the camera, noting that Lahaba is not working once again. And Bryce reminds her that she is entitled to at least run one break a day. Once the call was over, Bryce called Hunt for the first time ever. She had never called him before. But before she could make up a lie on why she called, Hunt realized she found something. She finally lets him inside the gallery and down to the library. Only down to the library because our little fire sprite was so worried about Bryce and her safety, lol. She's like at the door. She's like, BB, are you okay? I'm like so worried. And she's like, I'm fine. She's like, I have to like see your face. I need to make sure you're okay. Yeah, she is amazing. She just wanted to see Hunt. And yeah. Hunt has to promise that he will not tell Micah, which he agrees to, but if the governor wants to, he can make Hunt talk, okay? Even though Bryce has proven herself useful over these last few chapters, we still get little comments from Hunt about her personal choices, such as the fact that she drank from a reusable bottle that she pulled from her desk and he assumed it was alcohol. And again, Bryce does not correct him. People are going to think what they want to think, and that's what it is. And eventually, hopefully, Hunt will learn his lesson.
But at least she's saving the environment while she does it.
She sure is. Good job, Bryce. Staying hydrated, saving the environment, all the things. Queen. So once we are down into the library, we learn a few things about these books. Most of the items are contraband, but some of the books and scrolls are the last known copies on the planet of Midgard, which is a huge deal. People actually died to save those books that Lahaba and Bryce are in charge of protecting. So they are genuinely really important. We learn that these books also, again, are important and vulnerable because if the Senate or the Asteri found out about their existence, they would destroy them. They'd be gone. Most of them, Bryce can't read because they're in old and dead languages. But we do know people would and have killed for them in the past, and there are thousands of them. It's also a big deal for Hunt to enter the library because only Bryce, Lahaba, Syrinx, Jessaba, and Danica have ever been down there. So it's not like...
you said Bryce couldn't read, I thought you were just going to stop right there. I'm like, who is she, Feyre?
Oh my god, plot twist! Sarah J. Maas really likes to put facts in all of her books that are the same. It's the mirror. Like calls to like. No, for the record, Bryce can read. Can read all as well. Yes, she just cannot read these books because they're from dead languages. So we finally, again, he gets down there. And as Hunt and Lahaba meet for the first time, Hunt tells her she is beautiful and gives her a finger to perch on. And I am in love with this moment. And I want this on a sticker or some fan art or something. So bad.
What a man.
I know. He's like, you're beautiful. And she's like, ah! So we finally get to one of the first moments where Hunt catches a glimpse of who Bryce really is, right? Lahaba tells him about the story of Syrinx and how he came about to live with Bryce. We are reminded that Jessaba was about to sell him to a warlord and Bryce purchased him to save him. He learns that he was stolen from his mother as a cub and traded multiple times before Jessaba purchased him. However, out of all the times he was purchased and traded, Bryce was the only one to purchase him and his freedom along with it. He has the stamp on his right paw to prove it. Our fire sprite asks how much it costs to purchase Hunt, which we learn is 85 million gold marks because Lahaba feels connected to Hunt, or Affy as she calls him, because they are from the same house, House of Sky and Breath. But I remind everyone that technically the fire sprites don't belong to any house because they were kicked out after the rebellion. However, Lahaba mentions, obviously back before, that being in a house is more than just what the government says. It's a feeling. It's in your soul. So Hunt also learns in that moment that Lahaba's grandmother fought in the 18th Legion with Hunt and his army, which is crazy. So then we learn a couple different things. We learn that Hunt is worth 85 million gold marks. We learn that Lahaba is worth 90,000 gold marks. And Syrinx is worth 233,000 gold marks. So... that's a lot of money. Mm-hmm. Hunt being worth 85 million gold marks is something I want you guys to remember. Okay. I'm not going to tell you why yet. We'll learn in the future. Because again, we're not spoiling, we're guiding. But that amount of money is a lot of money. And keep that in mind. So Bryce when she bought Searing, she did get a 15% employee discount. And Jessica takes a portion out of each paycheck. Jessica is a fair boss. So she will be paying off Searing until she's 300 years old, or unless she decides not to make the drop. Then she would die. Another oh shit moment for Hunt is when he's informed that the apartment was not even paid for by Bryce. And she literally has no money at all. The apartment was Danica's, and it came with great enchantments and security. It came in the will that Danica left. So every chapter, Hunt gets a little bit more humbled. Eventually, he will earn the right to watch TV from the rooftop. He's not there yet.
Let my man watch TV.
No. He'll get there. He will earn it eventually, but not – he's like, oh, oops. I assumed that you were a rich brat, and you're not. So – we also learn a few other things in this chapter, and that is that Bryce knows the old language of the Fae. Fury got Bryce the job with Jessica, basically by force, which I want a bonus chapter on that, first of all. And then also Hunt attempts to get information about what Fury does in Pangaea, and she did not give him anything, which Bryce doesn't know anything. There's nothing to give, right? Fury does not talk about it at all. So Hunt's like, so what's your friend do over there? And she's like, bro, I have no idea. Like, for my safety and everyone else's safety, I don't even ask. So Hunt, however, does ask a good question, is that does Fury's contacts or enemies that could be associated with the murders? Which I also thought, again, was a good question. However, Bryce is like, absolutely not. There's no way. She keeps that very separate. We also, in this chapter, learn Hunt's age, which he is 233 years old.
He's such a baby.
Just a boy. And he was really young when he rebelled. So the rebellion was 200 years ago, and he was the leader of that rebellion. So he was the leader of the rebellion at literally just 33 years old because his powers were so good. We also get flashbacks during this. So if you got lost during this chapter at all and you're like, where are we? Like, what is happening? We get a glimpse of an incident that happened senior year with Bryce and Danica when Hunt asked her the question, have you ever killed anyone before? We know that she doesn't like to talk about it, so she doesn't give him a whole lot. We know that it involved a motorcycle, and they both went to the hospital and had to be taken care of by the pack. And this was a huge moment for Bryce and Danica's relationship. There are a couple quotes here that are very important. She said, I laid the truth laid bare. And Danica says, I love you, Bryce. I'm so sorry. And Bryce says, close your eyes, Danica. So these flashbacks right now don't seem super important, but they are very important. I want you guys to keep that in mind as well as we're going through this book. So because Bryce is having a hard time remembering the events before the pack's death, Hunt is asking her for good moments with Danica, right? He's like, let's start at the beginning. What are some things that like you guys had a good time with? Right? And hopefully that will help her remember things, and eventually she can get into the harder questions. So she tells him the story about her tattoo and how she was blackout drunk when she got it. A question of what Danica did that day before she got the tattoo comes up, and Bryce starts to write it all down. So thankfully, like, again, like, the gears are turning. They're talking about good moments, which is leading to less stress and her ability to remember more. So she writes down like all the fun that they had, all the drinks that they shared, all the laughs that they had together. And just as they were about to get somewhere with this list and her memories, Bryce gets a text from Rune to meet him at Luna's temple because it's the only place basically in the entire city that did not have cameras. And if you guys remember, in the temple, this is the temple where the horn was stolen from. And that wraps up chapter 20.
Honestly, very smart to suggest the temple. But
oh, for sure.
As Rune is here, he's actually using his shadows to hide himself, mm-hmm. which I think is very interesting. And I really want to know, like, if there is a difference. I mean, I'm sure there is a difference between, like, a shadow wielder and a shadow singer. And I wonder if, like, a wielder has the potential to be a singer. They just don't have, like, that level of knowledge yet.
So when you're saying shadow singer, you are referring to, like, Azriel from ACOTAR, correct?
Uh-huh.
Okay. And just for our friends who are like, hold on. Shadow Singer is not in this book. What's happening?
What's that word?
They're like, yeah. What does that mean? So yeah, if she's referring to Azriel and ACOTAR. I don't know. This may be a possible spoiler if you have not read ACOTAR. I hope that you have read ACOTAR. So cover your ears, turn down your sound, whatever you need to do. With Azriel, the shadows speak to him, right?
Mm-hmm.
But I don't think Rune's shadows say anything to him. I think
could, though?
And he just hasn't been able to, like, unlock it.
Mm-hmm. Because I think with Azriel's story, and I really need to do a reread, I know, like, the shadows come to him, and they're, like, almost, like, they almost have a sense to them.
Yeah, they're, like, a sentient being, almost.
Yeah, that's what I was
And they spy for him.
Yeah.
And, like, so gather intel.
What if Rune isn't there yet, but, like, he potentially could, like, there's more to his shadows, he just hasn't unlocked it yet.
That'd be really cool.
Anywho, that was just a fun thought that I wanted to share.
I like to manifest that for Crescent City Book 4.
Ugh, yes, please.
Write that down. Somebody write that down.
But as Rune is hiding in the temple using his shadows, he describes the statue of Luna, which I think is very, very interesting. So the temple itself houses a 30-foot statue of Luna sitting on a throne. Fun fact, it is actually 10 feet taller than the Lincoln Memorial statue, because I looked it up because I was very curious. So if you wanted, like, a real life reference, wow, the Lincoln Memorial statue is 19 feet, so almost 20 feet, and Luna's a little bit bigger.
That's wild.
But Luna is sitting on a golden throne. She's made out of a moonstone. She's wearing a silver tiara with a full moon in the center held by two crescent moons. Mm-hmm. There are also twin wolves sitting at her feet, and she has a bow made of solid gold as well as a quiver with silver arrows. Rune mentions, as he was talking about the statue, that Luna has mostly been represented with the wolf packs, and that there has been the Fae resemblance missing for 2 years. We're going to get back to that, because I found that very interesting that he never, like, said what, like, of the statue. People can be like, oh, that's Fae culture right there. I have a theory. Stay tuned. We also learned through the tour guide, as Rune is hiding, that Mike is also a patron of the temple. So he is funding money to this temple. He must highly value Luna and this temple and wanting to keep it very safe. Once Rune meets with Bryce and Hunt, he tells them that the Autumn King has tasked him with finding the horn, and that's one reason why he asked them to meet him there. We learned a little bit about the history of the horn through Rune, through some of the books he found. We learned that the horn was a weapon used by Peleus, who's the first starborn prince. He used it to battle demons during the First War. And the horn itself was forged by the Fae in their homeworld, and it was named after the new goddess, which is Luna. Which is also very interesting, because if it's a new goddess in this world, I'm like, who was it originally named for?
Right.
But essentially, Peleus used this horn to battle the demons during the crossing, and this became such a problem for the other party that the demon princes wanted the horns for themselves. So Rune shows a photo of Peleus with the horn to Bryce and Hunt. And in that photo, it shows a 8-pointed star behind Peleus, which is essentially an emblem of the starborn Fae. So during this battle, and also through the text that Rune finds, we learn that the Star Eater, who is also the Prince of the Pit, we learned that he created a demon to specifically hunt the horn using blood from Peleus and his own essence. And we learned that this monster is called a Crystallos, or if you read the graphic art, it was called a Crystallos, however you would like to pronounce it.
Ethan.
Potato, potato.
Crystallos, Crystallos. So many things.
It's fine. But essentially, we learn that Prince Peleus and the Prince of the Pit, who again is also the Star Eater, they fought for 3 days, with eventually the Star Eater landing the final blow, killing Prince Peleus. The horn for this battle, before the Prince Peleus died, he used it to ban the demons back to their realm, leaving only small cracks within the normal rift for Crystallos and other demons to travel through. And all people need to summon these demons is a little bit of summoning salt, which we learned about in the last episode. We also learned that the horn was broken after he banished the demons, and that essentially the horn can never be used again. with all this new information, they're now starting to suspect that maybe suspects might have had contact with the horn. And the Crystallos killing again could mean that whoever is in charge with murdering the pack could also be someone who's also looking for the horn. Mm-hmm. Hunt, after learning all of this, he goes outside of the temple where he is trying to call Justinian to get more history on the Crystallos, since Rune wasn't able to find that much information. He literally was looking through his father's study and had a book jump out at him to be like, hey, it's in here. But Hunt calls Justinian, accidentally swears in front of a priestess, and he's like, oh, my bad. Oops, there's a child. Eventually, Justinian picks up, and he says that he'll get right on it. But he also, we learn a little bit more about Hunt's history with Shahar. And we learn that ever since Shahar, she has essentially ruined everyone else for Hunt. And mm-hmm. Justinian kind of pokes the bear and is making all these comments about Bryce, saying like, oh, it doesn't hurt that like the person you're in charge with watching is like kind of pretty easy on the eyes. And Hunt's like, no, lock that down. And mm-hmm. Justinian's yeah. like, maybe give it a chance, because Hunt hasn't been with anyone for 2 centuries. That is so long. Like, I love the right? dedication, but I'm like, bro, you need some happiness.
Yeah. Hunt deserves a little bit of love.
He yeah, deserves love and TV.
Love and TV. The little things. That's such a long time. Like, but he was built to be patient and strong, and you know what I mean? He doesn't let like the need for finer things in life or even like joy get in the way of whatever mission he is doing.
Mm-hmm.
Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And like, he has one job right now and one job only, and that is to be a slave and do whatever Micah says. So I get it. But also, Shahar was really powerful, and I don't know. Later on, we'll learn more about the relationship, but I don't like her for him. Obviously, it's fine because she died, but she's not going to come back.
Oh, but I was like, gosh. Oh,
he was young.
Yuck.
He was young.
Oh.
He was like so, yuck. He was 33 years old. And this yeah. like big like
fetus.
Archangel is like, love you. But like, did she really? I don't know. I question it. I have nothing. I have no other receipts other than it kind of gave me the ick just a little bit. Tea. So in chapter 22, Bryce questions Rune as soon as Hunt flies away, right? He leaves, and she wants to know if the Autumn King had anything to do with the murders. Rune swears that the Autumn King is not involved, because why would he ask Rune to find the horn if he was just summoning the Crystallis demon himself? The king at this point does not know that he is meeting with Bryce, like that Rune and Bryce are meeting together. And she also reminds him that just because they are working together doesn't mean that the state of their relationship is changing, because we know that Rune and her had a good relationship and he ruined it. So we finally learn why. So going back a few chapters again, we know that they used to be good. Things were said. He hurt her. And we learn that he called her a half-breed slut.
Boo.
Rude. Rune Dannon, Crown Prince of the Belbar and Fae. WTF. So, Bryce reminds Rune that just because he dresses like a rebel doesn't mean he is any different from the other Fae assholes around. Which, fair point. So, going back to the gallery archives, we learn that there is no information in there on the horn. And we have not heard back from Rune yet on like the Fae archives and if there's any information in there. We then, again, hear this line, look towards where it hurts the most, by the Viper Queen. Okay. As much as this evidence hurt Bryce, she knew it was true. Even shaking, she got to work and wrote down the list. So again, she like couldn't remember or it hurt too much, and she didn't want to put anything on paper, but now it's finally time.
23 not gonna lie, a little bit of a filler chapter, but it does mm-hmm. contain some important information. So Bryce is back at Griffin Antique. She's on the phone with Jezebel. They're talking about a deal that Bryce just solidified for her regarding a leopard shifter. Mm-hmm. However, this leopard shifter was very, very sleazy and was trying to make advances on Bryce, which caused her to essentially twinge something in her leg. So the leg that she injured the night with the crystallis, that's bothering her a bunch. So as she is going up to Jezebel's office, pain in her leg, we get some more Jezebel threats. We get 4 through 6. Would you like to be a worm, Bryce? Would you like to be a dung beetle or a centipede?
They all
if you
count.
Had to be an insect, what would you want to be?
Me?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, that's a good question.
Because I know we talked about like animals in general, but this one's like specifically like insect coded. And Bryce was like, well, I'd rather be a dragonfly. Like if we're going to do that.
Right. Okay. So if I want, like part of me wants to be like some like super tough insect that like does all the crazy things, but then part of me is like, I would be one of those really chunky bumblebees that are so cute and they just like bop around and they're like just on all the flowers and they're just like minding their own business, and I think that would actually just be me. I want to be like something cool, like a wasp or like
something awesome. I are enemies.
Does it like or like a scorpion, that counts, right? Like I want to be like that, but I really would just be a bumblebee.
Interesting. I feel like I'd be a moth. I feel like they're very slept on.
I get like a cool moth, like one of those like really pretty,
like one of the
moths.
Pretty ones. Yeah.
Yeah. Pretty moth. I can see that. I love it. Yes. Want to be scorpion is actually B.
The important thing is whenever Bryce is going to Jezebel's office, she mentions seeing this artifact called the Godslayer Rifle. Mm-hmm. It is essentially dismantled and it sits behind Jezebel's desk almost like an art piece. And this rifle essentially, odd enough, Bryce says that it gives the patrons who come into the gallery comfort. Which I'm like, this weapon's kind of a big deal mm-hmm. because there's only few that exist and it's supposed to be like this really powerful weapon. It also makes people like remind everyone that, hey, Jezebel's in charge. It's also like a symbol of power. But I'm like, wouldn't have expected it to also bring comfort.
Mm-hmm.
But aside from this dismantled gun, what people don't know is that Jezebel also has a bullet hidden in a painting right beside of it. Mm-hmm. And on the bullet, it says Memento Mori, which is the same quote from the meat market.
Yes. Remember, you will die.
Yeah. So it doesn't matter what you do. Hunt calls Bryce to let her know that she got a call regarding a murder at Luna's temple.
Mm-hmm.
And he essentially takes Bryce to the scene. Bryce doesn't want to go. She's trying to make up excuses saying, oh, I have a customer. And he essentially like bangs on the ceiling. He's like, no, we're going. And once they get to the crime scene, it's essentially the same exact way that the pack of devils were found. Hunt brings Bryce to the scene, takes her behind the curtain, and Rune essentially scolds Hunt for bringing her to the scene of the crime. Hunt says, I warned her on the walk over here what she'd see. But then afterward, he was like, did I?
This is why he doesn't get to watch TV.
Listen, this is one time where I'm like, you messed up, bud.
Like, bro.
Because he said, I would warn her. And then he's like, did I?
No,
and
then you just forced her to go.
He said, I didn't realize what a mess it would be. And I was like, dude, you were literally on the first scene of the crime like years ago. And it was a big deal. So like, how would you not remember what that looked like or think it wouldn't like stir
his
something?
His man brain did not compute.
It did not compute.
At all.
We can't blame him for being man. He suffers from the chronic illness.
Hold on, I need a moment. I actually need that on a sticker. And I'm going to give it out to men that annoy me.
He can't help you, man.
I'm so sorry you suffer from the chronic illness.
Oh my gosh. I say that all the time, though. Whenever, like, I'm talking in conversations with some people, would be like, oh, yes, they did da-da-da-da-da-da-da. But he's a guy, so, like, we can't blame him that much. Like, he can't help it.
I cannot. I've never once heard that in my life, and I feel like I have been deprived of that banger of a line for 30 years. You're welcome. Okay. Wow. Yeah, I needed that today. That was great.
I got you.
And end scene. And actually, we're going to end the episode right here, guys. Thanks for watching. That's all we need. We'll see you next week.
It's been fun.
Wild.
Oh, okay. So Hunt suffers from being man. He can't help it. But every now and then, it he has a flare-up. So couldn't remember if he warned her on the walk. Didn't realize it was going to be a mess. And then he tells Rune, she's a grown woman. She doesn't need you to decide what she can handle. Mm-hmm. And to me, spoilers for those who have not read Throne of Glass, specifically Tower of Dawn. So if you have not gotten that far into the series, earmuffs for a moment.
For like 30 seconds.
Maybe a minute.
Yeah. Okay, earmuffs for 1 minute of this episode.
So whenever he said that and Bryce is essentially like going through PTSD, it was giving Irene whenever Kale rides to the tower and mm-hmm. all of these acolytes are like trying to like essentially like manhandling him, like trying to pull him down from the horse. Mm-hmm. And Kale is like, instead of like helping Irene out and doing a teachable moment, he's like, you know what? No, I'm done. And like Irene couldn't understand like why he was so upset. And then Hephaestha, I think was her name, she was like, well, he probably didn't appreciate like him not like, he already lacks so much control in his life now, like that added to it wasn't helping. And like even in that moment, it's like, Irene, I love you, but you messed up, girlfriend. And Hunt, you also messed up.
Yeah, Hunt for sure messed up. Okay, spoiler moment over. You can come back.
Yeah.
If you muted your ears, you are good.
But as Hunt, so Bryce essentially walks away from the scene. Hunt is walking with her, and she's kind of just like starting to, again, essentially go through PTSD. She's reliving the moment, reliving all the feelings, and Hunt's telling her, take a walk, walk it out. So she is. And he starts questioning her, just trying to gain more information. He asks, how did you survive the Crystallos? And Bryce says, I didn't survive. It got away. Mm-hmm. And then Hunt, again, he can't help you, man. He messes up again. And he reveals that the archangel that Bryce was trying to save in the square that night whenever the Crystallos attacked was, in fact, Micah.
Oh, my God. That literally made goober. Me so, she was like, what?
Yeah,
the literal governor
just whiplash
was the one who was injured. So that wraps up chapter 23. In chapter 24, after receiving the insane news that she did not save some random angel in the alley that night, that she actually saved Micah himself, the again archangel and governor, which this makes sense of why when, like, back in those chapters, when Bryce gave the phone number to the emergency services person, he, like, panicked. He was like, oh my gosh, help is, like, on the way. So it also explains why the name of the angel never got out to the public, right? If word spread of the governor being attacked and saved by Bryce, like, say, attacked by a demon and then saved by Bryce, it would be a really bad look for him. This is really frustrating to Bryce because she spent so much time searching for this angel to see if they were okay and if they survived. Like, that was a big deal for her because she wanted to see that something that she did made a difference. Hunt is apologizing for not telling her or being honest, but the hole that he is digging just keeps getting deeper and deeper and deeper. I don't understand why he can't just stop talking for just the, like, I love you, Hunt. Just close your mouth. Stop.
Put
just stop where you are.
Down.
Because he says he is sorry that she is still on his suspect list. I can't believe he's alive right now. So obviously Bryce is really, really upset about this, right?
Yeah.
He realizes in that moment that he has went too far. He has said too many things. He has messed up too much. He flies away. That's for the best. Take a break. Take a breather. Come back. Bryce breaks out into a run to help her anxiety. So she's running and running and running until she receives a phone call and she ends up at the White Raven. We are taken back to a memory about senior year again. So in previous chapters, again, we kind of had seen a little bit about that senior year. So we're now in that flashback once more. The motorcycle that we know about is that crashed was stolen. There was a rifle that Bryce had that was tossed to the side, and both girls now have their hands behind their head. They are surrounded by males searching for bullets, and this is, again, the first time Danica ever said, I love you, because she's like, I love you, Bryce, I'm sorry. And then, again, the quote from Bryce is, close your eyes, Danica. Before we know anything more, we are snapped out of the memory once again, and Bryce walks into the club. So we are getting very small tidbits about this memory, but this memory is important and it does very much come full circle later on in this book.
So as Bryce is running, Hunt is trailing Bryce through the city. He's getting phone calls, getting updated information on everything that he's asked about. So we heard from Justinian that there is no new information on the Crystallos that Hunt didn't already learn from Rune. Victoria confirms the Viper's Queen alibis that she gave Bryson Hunt in the meat market. And Isaiah also confirms that the last victim, the one that they just witnessed and visited the scene for, was a missing acolyte from the temple. Bryce is now at the White Raven. Hunt essentially asks if he can join her. Bryce says no. And then we get another person that's like, excuse me. And then Hunt turns around and it's Juniper. She's like, oh, my bad. Actually, Bryce, if this is cool, he can stay. So Bryce joins Girls Night. And essentially, Hunt learns a lot about Bryce in this chapter. Mm-hmm. So he learns a lot through just her actions. So the first thing Bryce does is Juniper's ordering food and so is Hunt, and he asks Bryce if she would like anything, and she says no, I'm on a liquid diet, gesturing to her glass, which he assumes is filled with vodka. He orders her food anyway. She bites his head off for it.
Okay, I have a question.
Mm-hmm.
Would you want that? Would you have been mad if you were like, no, I'm on a liquid diet, and then a man ordered you food anyways?
I feel like it would all depend on the context. Because I feel like in this situation, if I was in Bryce's shoes and Hunt has already digged himself a hole so deep with how like much he's let information slip and how like much he's gotten on her nerves by taking her to the crime scene, saying that she was a victim. If I was Bryce in that moment, I would just like be like, get out of the club. I don't even want to see your face right now. I would just be so PO'd. Mm-hmm. But like in another situation, then I'd be like, oh, like that's really, really sweet. Like, thank you for making sure like I have food in my system so that I'm not this like drunk bimbo wandering around. So I feel like it just depends on the context. Could it potentially be sweet? Yes. In Bryce's situation, I would be like, get out of this club.
Do you think she would have eaten it if Juniper ordered it?
Yes.
I think so, too. I agree.
I don't say why.
If Juniper was like, let's get some like some fries for the table.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? So that, because it's like coming from her friend, someone she's not upset at in the moment.
Mm-hmm.
You know? It's interesting to me that Juniper didn't do that. What are your thoughts?
I feel like maybe Juniper knows which battles to pick.
Fair. Yeah. She's known Bryce long enough.
Mm-hmm. I feel like maybe she can gauge when she needs to step in and intervene. Mm-hmm. And maybe just depending on Bryce's body language and her previous conversation with Hunt before Juniper walked up, maybe she's like, this is a time where she needs to just debrief, let it all out. And then in her own time, she'll come around when she's cooled off.
Well, and Juniper doesn't know that, like, Bryce hasn't eaten all day. Right? Like, Hunt knows that. Hunt's like, hey, you didn't eat breakfast and you didn't eat lunch and now you're not eating now. Like, so, like, Juniper doesn't know that. So,
but she does know more information about Bryce than Hunt at this time.
Also true. Yes.
Because at this point in time, he thinks that she is constantly drinking, constantly going back to her party girl days. Because he essentially scolds Bryce and tells her, like, stop being a cliche, and takes her drink. And whenever he sniffs it, he finds out that it's water. And she's like, yeah, I don't drink alcohol anymore. And he asks when. And she says, you're the Ember Mortis, figure it out. Although I will say Hunt did earn another point back in his favor during this part, because whenever they were ordering food, Juniper orders her food first. And as she is going through her list of orders with these special restrictions, she essentially tells Hunt that she doesn't eat animal products. And then he asks, is it okay if I do? Because he used to fight with fawns during the rebellion. And so he was really good friends with them. But he was very conscientious about it. And she was like, yeah, that's fine. And he even got nervous ordering the, I think it was like a ribs and a burger. But I was like, that's so sweet that you asked, though.
That is very sweet. He also gets a point because he remembers what Bryce likes.
Yeah.
Even though they've never been to dinner together. And I was like, okay, you get a half point.
You get 1.5 points.
Yes. Good job. You are now 15 inches above the hole that you have dug. That is 6 feet deep.
Just you're 15 getting, inches.
You're doing better.
But not only does Bryce have to worry about Hunt hovering over her and acting like a mother hen, Rune also comes to the club to check on Bryce. He got word from the butterfly shifter that Bryce was here and she wasn't, she was getting vibes that she wasn't doing too well. So Rune wanted to stop by just to check on her, especially since he saw how she reacted to the scene of the crime. And Hunt continues to learn more about Bryce, and Rune shares that Bryce used to dance a lot until the pack died. As Bryce comes back from the restroom, because she was gone at this time whenever Rune was there, the club decides to explode. And what a way to end a chapter.
Yeah. Just poof. Boom. Yeah. So that's a wild way to end a chapter. So that was the end of chapter 25. And then in chapter 26, we're still in the same setting. So everything is in chaos. Bryce jumped towards Juniper and covered her from the explosion. After everything was said and done, Hunt attempted to get the girls up and off the ground. Juniper was okay and didn't even have a mark on her, but Bryce, on the other hand, was covered in blood and debris. All of a sudden, Juniper hits Bryce right in the face. And she is pissed and makes notes that she made the drop, but Bryce has not made the drop. So, like, that's a big deal because, again, once you make the drop, you essentially become immortal. So, like, Juniper having made the drop is much more able to handle a situation like this versus, like, a half-A, half-human who is not. Bryce legit does not care about herself, right? We know that. And we know that Jupiter is in line to be a big part of, like, the dance company to get, like, solos and things like that. And if she got injured, she would lose that opportunity. Hunt carried Bryce over to a safe house that Rune gave them. It was super messy and, like, party house, but it worked for the moment, for sure. Now, when we get into, like, the how and why and who of this bombing, the first name that Hunt, and I'm sure all of us as well, were thinking was Philip Briggs, right? Who, again, if you don't remember, Philip Briggs was the leader of, like, the humans rebellion-ish kind of that's going on right now over in Pangera. And he is currently in prison. Danica and the pack put him in prison. And for a long time, for 2 years, it was noted that he was the one who killed the pack. But then we're figuring out, like, he probably wasn't because he, again, was in prison. So even though he's still there, he does have followers on the outside that are possibly still active. And it is also possible that it could be someone upset at them for even looking into this case of, like, the horn and the pack and things like that. But Hunt doesn't think that that's where this trail is going to. he mentions that it could not even have anything to do with them, like those three, like Rune, Bryson, and Hunt, and that it could have been someone who had a problem with the club or the club owner. As Hunt attempts to take care of Bryce and all of her injuries, he notices something, the scar on her leg that she received 2 years ago. As he's looking at it with horror, basically, we learn that it was Hunt who stapled up her leg as if they were on a battlefield, and he assumed this whole time that she got it removed to look better and that she only walked with a limp because of her high heels. So again, Hunt is humbled once more and is understanding more about Bryce. Rune makes an entrance from the club over to this house and has some seriously bad news. He tells the two that the evidence that the human rebels, all the evidence shows that the human rebels and that device was smuggled in through the back of the club and that their logo was right on the box. Sometimes when you're looking at okay, first of all, I am not police. I am not a detective. I am none of things. I am like one of the people who like watches Grey's Anatomy and therefore I am doctor. I watch crime shows. So therefore I am Olivia Benson. So when evidence looks too good to be true, maybe it is. Right? So the device was smuggled in through the back, logo right on the box. He also notes that right next to the box, there is also a logo that could possibly look like a curved horn. This picture could be a message to them, and it's odd that they were all there during the explosion, right? So even if it was not Briggs that did this, it could still be one of his followers. So the evidence is still out on that one. But the only thing to do now is to go talk to Briggs. He's in prison again, so Hunt has to like file paperwork and make phone calls. So it will take a minute to get an appointment, but hopefully that's the next step.
Get an appointment.
I didn't know how else to word it. I was like, a visit?
I think they literally say get an appointment, but it sounds so formal.
It does.
I'd like to see the prisoner, please.
Yes. Hello. I'd like to make an appointment to visit Philip Briggs. So Rune notes that the Autumn King is now aware of Bryce's involvement in finding the horn. He is upset, as he's upset about everything, but he's upset and he warns Rune about the things that she might say. He is worried about her intentions with the horn if she finds it. So the Autumn King is forcing her to have a security guard 24/7 to protect her, quotes. But we know really it's to make sure she doesn't cause any trouble, and basically nothing can come up right before the summit. Rune offers his assistance, but Bryce said, hell no, absolutely not. So she assigns Hunt to be the guard. He's looking over her 24/7 anyways. He might as well just be the one, right? Even though the king won't like it, it doesn't matter because he never was like, this is exactly who needs to guard her. So she's playing by the rules because she technically is under his kingdom, but it's in the details.
Should have been more specific.
Oh, exactly. So we learn about how and why Ember Quinlan, which is Bryce's mother, did not stay with the king and chose to leave because when she was pregnant with Bryce, he laid a hand on her and she chose to run and protect them both. Which was really sad. Hunt at this point does not know that, like, if you guys remember, Bryce and Rune are not cousins, but they are actually brother and sister. But Hunt at this point does not know this. But she is worrying that he's figuring it out. But as far as we know, he still does not know. Bryce questions why Rune was even at the White Raven in the first place, but he deflects the answer. He, as we mentioned in the previous chapter, he was there because he's keeping tabs on Bryce, and someone at the club called him to say that she was there. But what he tells Bryce is that he wanted to talk to her about checking on Jessica's library, the one that no one is supposed to know about, but yet everybody knows about it. Right? Like, everybody's like, oh yeah, there's something weird down there. So he makes a good point, though, because he wants to see if he can find anything about the horn. He already went through the Fae archives, as we know in previous chapters, but he has been there twice and found nothing. So he's gone through all the things. So the deal that is made with him and Bryce is that he can see the library and read the books if he puts Declan in contact with Bryce whenever she needs him. Because, again, he's like the big hacker guy. So Rune agrees, but we also note that if Deck knows what's going on and about this entire case and situation, then Flynn will now know as well. Okay. So we're bringing back in Rune's two best buddies, Deck and Flynn, which is amazing. We love them. We still need the last locations of Danica's movements. And the den would have it, right? So Deck is supposed to hack into the den's archives to see if they can find anything. So there's like the Fae archives, and now there's like the den archives, which is like the pack and where they are as well. So before Rune left the house, he receives a call from the Autumn King. Of course he does. He is concerned that the horn will go to the angels if it is found, and he cannot have that happen. Rune is not worried, though, about punishment for doling out this information to, like, Bryson Hunt, because he knows the one thing that matters most. The royal bloodline ends with him. This is what the Oracle said when he visited years ago. She did not mention if it was, like, death or infertility or what it was, and he never told his father, the Autumn King, and what he said was that that the Oracle said he would be a just and, like, a fair and just king. So again, the royal bloodline ends with him. It did originally make him nervous when he met Bryce, because she is technically part of that line, right? And if the Oracle's like, the royal bloodline ends with you, then he's like, what's going to happen to Bryce? However, she does not claim any part of the throne, and the king refused to even acknowledge her existence, so she's not in line for the throne. She's like sidelined for it. So she's sidelined. She's not worried about it. And that is where we wrap up chapter 26.
The holidays may seem far away, but they are approaching fast. Consider giving the gift of reading this year to your loved ones and to yourself as well. Shop our favorite selection of Kindles right in the Goodish Girls Amazon storefront using the link in our show notes. And while you're there, don't forget you can get 1 free month of Kindle Unlimited when you sign up for the Kindle Unlimited membership. Happy reading.
So that is this week's guided tour through Crescent City. If you have not read past this and you do not want to come into the House of Theories and Lore, now is the time to pause this episode and then come back when you are done reading these series and you want to go through all of the things. If you have read all the things or you want to be in the spoilers anyways, welcome to the House of Theories and Lore.
Whoop, whoop.
Woo! All right. The one thing I want to talk about this week is I want to talk about, like, we know towards the end, like, the truth about Hunt, and that he was created by the princes of hell, right? My question is, were there multiple signs in early chapters of this book that we missed? There's a couple that I think that I was like, oh, we should have probably seen something like that coming, right? So, like, the fact that he was the only one with lightning power when he was younger. Everybody else around him had, like, different powers, but nothing like lightning, so he had to teach himself how to use it. We also learn, again, Hunt's age. He was 233, and he was really young when he rebelled. So he was 33 years old when he was the leader because his powers were, like, that powerful. He was that good, right? Also, his job was literally to hunt down demons, and he could kill any demon from any lair. And one more thing that I want to say was, like, maybe a red flag within this book is that the first time Adis sees Hunt, which, again, if you're remembering, Adis is from hell, I think, like, the fifth lair, maybe, something like that. He's the cat that walks around. He looks at Hunt and he says, why are you wearing that black crown? And I think that that is a key moment, because I think that we all read over it the first time, but that was like a recognition thing. He wasn't like, who are you? Or, you know, not like everybody mm-hmm. knows who the Umber Mortis is, but he was like, why are you wearing that?
Yeah.
What is on your head? Like, that's weird.
It's such a silly goose.
What are your thoughts on that?
So I definitely think that that quote that Adis says with what, like, why are you wearing that crown, that definitely stood out to me. Also in the second book, I can't recall who says it, but they eventually walk past a statue who happens to be Hunt's father, and they tell Hunt, like, oh, you look a lot like that guy. Hunt's like, what? No, not that guy. Mm-hmm. There are definitely nods who his father is, which is definitely really cool seeing the second time around, because I feel like whenever I first started reading the series, I didn't pay attention to, like, things that could potentially connect. like, now that I am a seasoned reader, like, reading the Empyrean series, I, like, deeply analyze details. Even whenever I was reading Throne of Glass, I had to be gaslit into a bunch of things to where whenever I was doing my buddy read, my friend was like, that's an interesting thought, or like, could be, but I don't think so. Like, I need to relearn how to just enjoy the ride, because now I just constantly try to big brain things.
Yeah.
Like, it's not like necessarily cliffhanger, but the thing that made me mad at Cardin in the Cruel Prince series, I predicted and I got right when it was going to happen and how he was going to do it. So, yeah, I've definitely learned how to pick out details, which is fun doing rereads, but I really need to stop doing that whenever I read things the first time, because I just ruin it for myself.
Yeah, girl needs to calm down. I originally thought that, like, Adis was just a judgy cat. I was like, and why is he wearing that crown? Adis should know, but, like, maybe he, like, is it just judgy? And he's like, why are you wearing that crown? So I found that as a red flag. So I would like to know, like, from our listeners, is there red flags that you saw that maybe, like, some of us missed? Or, like, if you did a second time reread or a listen, was there something where you're like, oh, I should have caught that in the beginning? So I send the question out to, like, our followers and see what they think, too.
Yes, so put something in the comments. I want to read them. Yes,
tell us. Tell us all the things. What do you have for this week?
Okay. First is very non-serious, but I made a big, not a big girl purchase, but I made a fun purchase with my adult money. Run. Don't walk to your local Michaels, because in the, I think it's, like, called, like, the gothic horror section, they have
Nestle's. Is that a gold mask?
It is a gold mask. You're lying. And because I saw someone post about it on TikTok, and they're like, they have Nesta's mask. So I posted it too. And if they had a harp and, like, the rest of the Dread Trove, I would, I really wish that there was, like, pieces where you could actually wear it, because I'm like, in the book, like, it's not going to be some flimsy mask. Like, it is going to be actual, like, hard, which just is. But I was like, bro, it's her mask. Resan should really look into that, because they shouldn't be selling these.
I know, right?
But on that note, my random funny thought that I had the other day, and I was like, what if, hypothetically, we live in Bryce's timeline / universe? And as we know, in the third book, she goes back to Valaris to ask Nesta for the mask. And I'm like, what if, like, people saw that and, like, wanted to commemorate, like, the power of the mask and how much, like, it helped save the city, that they recreated it to be sold to citizens as, like, a nod to the power.
That would be wild.
I just thought that was funny.
Yes, we all need this mask.
Are you ready for my big theory?
I'm ready. Throw it at me. What do we have going on this week?
Buckle up and just, you're going to get a lot of hear me outs. And this might be the biggest stretch.
Okay.
But I am going hard on this theory. Okay. So part of this theory is things that I have formed myself. And part of things that I'll talk about a little further down that I kind of meshed with this that I thought of comes from a TikTok account named Emily Quoth Reads, spelled C-R-O-I-X. So is eventually...
That's Croy, right?
I'm
just guessing.
Quoth.
Okay. You're right. I was thinking of LaCroix, like the drink.
Oh my gosh. I doubt it's that.
It's not that.
Okay. So this little crash out started whenever we are at the temple with Rune, and he shows the picture of Paleos with the 8-pointed star behind him. Mm-hmm. We also learn more in chapter 29 of this book. Hunt eventually finds a book about the story of Prince Paleos and Lady Helena. Mm-hmm. So, who else has an 8-pointed star on them?
Nesta
sure does.
Nesta.
Stay with
me. My girl.
Okay, so as Ruin is giving this information, he says that the broken horn can only be repaired by light that is not light and magic that is not magic. He also mm-hmm. says that starborn magic, his words not mine, and a bunch of other crap can be used to bring objects to life. Again, we know that Nesta's bargain tattoo with Cassian is an 8-pointed star. Mm-hmm. What if in Silver Flames, the House of Wind, and Nesta's sword, Ataraxia, were made by Nesta because she stole starborn magic from the cauldron? Because what if the cauldron is made out of the same material as the horn? Stand by. I have more. Don't worry.
I'm processing. I'm thinking.
Because, okay, Nesta potentially being starborn, she has the star on her back. Mm-hmm. What else is really, really big that has stars on it that is referenced throughout the series?
Like the mountain?
The mountain, but also the dresser drawers.
The dresser drawers.
So whenever Feyre paints the dresser drawers, mm-hmm. she has allegedly stars for Feyre, mm-hmm. flames for Nesta, flowers for Elaine. But what if the drawers are wrong and that's not the correct order? So what if the drawers actually reference their fates and their true mates? Hear me out. What if Feyre actually equals flowers? I'm going to get hate for this. It's fine. And her true mate is Tamlin.
No.
Hear me out.
I
don't like it either. However, it does make sense. Because in ACOTAR, we learn that whenever a bond is rejected by a mate, it is still there. It's not fully gone. But because it is there, the other half, males usually have more of an intense effect to it, but it can lead to psychological suffering such as madness, grief, and despair. What happens to Tamlin after Feyre was taken and in the cauldron?
Stuck in his beast form, and only Rhysand visits him, and we probably don't know the real conversations that they're having.
And hold on, there's more. Who else was stuck in their beast form after their mates died?
Who?
Rowan and Aelin. So after Rowan's mate died, he was stuck in his hawk form for, I think, 2 years. And Aelin was stuck in her beast form, which is her human form, for, I think, also 2 years after Sam died. And so what if Rhysand is essentially another Maeve situation where he's like, yes, Feyre, darling, I am your mate. But it's a lie.
Oh my god.
Also, Feyre's tattoo, people, whenever I see cosplayers do it, no tea, no shade, it's always swirls. But in the book, it specifically says that her tattoo is made up of flowers. So,
wild.
That is Feyre and the flowers. Moving on to my girly Nesta. So, sidetrack. So, staying with Feyre, because I also like thought of this yesterday whenever I was writing my notes. What if Luna is Feyre? Stay with me. So, as this
I'm
is
so
a lot of
just
stay
right
with
now.
Me. Just stay
I'm
with
so
me.
Stressed.
So,
I'm
what?
Staying with you.
So, Luna is described as mostly being the statue that the wolves claim and that they look to. And Rune is going through what the statue looks like. He's saying that she's sitting on a gold throne. There's wolves at her feet. Mm-hmm. She is wearing a crown with a moon in the center with two crescent moons on the side mm-hmm. with stars. Feyre's crown is also described as being crafted from silver and diamond, shaped into swirls of stars and various moon phases with a central, it says a central crescent moon mm-hmm. with solid stars also flanking it. But mm-hmm. to have multiple phases of the moon, I feel like it would maybe resemble more of Luna's crown, which has the full moon in the center, followed by the two crescent moons on the right. side.
Right. Yeah, those are different phases.
Which could be a nod to Feyre's crown. Also, Rune doesn't specifically say what in the statue is like pulling into the Fae heritage. So right. not only could the crown be a nod to Feyre, but also specifically the bow and arrows, because that is the last thing that Rune mentions before he mentions the lack of Fae heritage. And what is our girly Feyre known for? And it could easily, it could be an easily addition to a statue.
Gosh darn it. I don't like it. I understand. I have none rebuttals, but I don't like it.
We're going to keep going, okay? I got one more big one, and it's Nesta. She is stars.
This is where I'm going to get mad. I can feel it.
But her true mate is Cassian.
Okay. Oh, okay. Oh.
Okay.
So that's people. What I was like, that's what I was like waiting for you to say is like, I was going to get in like the Cassian Nesta fight, and I was like, I know.
No.
All right, no. Tell me what you got. That's fine. Everything Safe else space. I can handle. Everything else I'm fine.
So I couldn't find it, and I feel like I would need to do a reread because I couldn't find it specifically in Silver Flames, but it could be mentioned somewhere else because I thought it was in relation to their bond, but I think it's in relation to Cassian's power, like his essence in a sense. Mm-hmm. But it's referred to as Starfire, which is also another way that mm-hmm. Bryce and Hunt's bond is also referred to.
Yeah, that's true.
Also, at the end of book 3 of Crescent City in Flame and Shadow, Bryce tells Nesta, go find out what that tattoo means. And she mm-hmm. also gives her the Starborn sword so she can find out the connection between the two.
Yeah.
Also, you know how I said, what if the cauldron is made out of the same material as the horn?
Yes.
And I said standby.
Yes, I've been picking it up.
So the horn, as we learned from Rune, was made by Peleus essentially using a little bit of himself.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Which is Starborn. And the Starborn sword, also in ACOTAR, it's known as Gideon. It is said to have been dipped in the cauldron. And so people think that the star on Nesta's back could also be the cauldron symbol, again, tying it back to the Starborn Fae because the eight-pointed star is their emblem.
That is a lot.
It is a lot. When I say I crashed out so hard. And I was like, but wait. And I was typing so fast.
Oh my God.
Yeah,
that's, woo.
So we have Feyre flowers, Nesta's is stars, Elaine is flames.
But there's why not... is Elaine flames?
So Elaine is flames because her true mate is sweet baby boy Lucien. Because he has literal flames in his veins. That is his speciality. Because of his true dad, who is Helion, who is the High Lord of the Day Court. Again, I got the drawers thing, like the base of it, mm-hmm. regarding mates from Emily Qua Reads. This is her take on why Elaine is flames. Again, and she says it too. We don't know a lot about Elaine.
Right.
But she mentions that Elaine's name could also just be an anagram for Aelin.
Yes.
Because I also
could be true.
Because I also think with Elaine's power that she was gifted by the cauldron with her talent to be a seer, mm-hmm. although it is not the same power that Caltaine has in Throne of Glass, I do think Elaine could potentially be set up as like the next Caltaine. Because I don't know about everyone, mm-hmm. but I feel like it's kind of universal where people are kind of just like, Elaine's Elaine. She planted flowers instead of vegetables during the hard time.
Okay, so, well, in her defense, Feyre bought her the seeds and she can't read. So.
Oh my gosh, that is so true.
She literally bought her the seeds, but if they were like vegetables and flowers, she's like, I don't know. I guess this one looks good. Like this one's pretty. And Elaine
is probably like, you did great, sweetie.
Should she have asked the vendor, is this a vegetable? Probably. But, you know, in the court, in the town didn't want to talk to her. So I get that. And I think she's set. I think Elaine is set up for us to be like, man, Elaine's mid. Like, man, Elaine's it.
And
like,
that's exactly how I was about Caltaine. Like, I did not like Caltaine in Throne of Glass. And I still, like, I respect her and I love Caltaine now, but mm-hmm. I was never like over the top as I was for other characters. But I think Elaine could potentially be the next Caltaine. So like anagram for Aelin, maybe, mm-hmm. but like I think her true tie to Throne of Glass would be like Elaine's going to be the next like big power player.
I still am betting money that Elaine is going to be the bad guy and she will be the traitor within the court.
I could kind of see that, but I still kind of wanted to be more. Because what is she doing?
I also wanted to be more. And I think, I don't know. I think that more, maybe there'll be two. Maybe there'll be more than one traitor. Maybe there'll be traitors in different ways, right? I think Azrael is watching more. I think that he's not actually in love with her. I think that he is watching her and the shadows are watching her. Because he also sees the secrets that she holds.
And she and Azrael can't tell anything because... My name is the Morgan. My power is truth, but she's actually withholding truth. So Azra's like, I would tell you, but I can't. Also with Aeris, whereas he's like, would tell you what happened between me and Mor, but you're going to have to ask her. Because
literally cannot tell you.
So I think her power is just simply withholding truth.
Yes, agreed. I agree with that. Those are some wild theories.
Thank you for coming to my crash out.
Yeah. Are they starborn? You know, that's crazy. Did we miss a lot of red flags on Hunt? Let us know.
I'm so excited. I truly think Nesta's starborn. That'd be cool. Yell it.
I am manifesting Bryce showing up in ACOTAR 6.
Them
fighting together.
So people think that the sixth book might be Elaine. But with the way that CC3 ended with Bryce telling Nesta, like, hey, go find out what that tattoo means.
It has to be a Nesta book.
If Nesta's a side quest, I will riot.
Oh, for sure.
Because this is such a big deal. Because also, I, like Bryce, kind of tuned out whenever I think it was Thea that we meet in CC3 that Bryce awakens mm-hmm. and she, like, tells the history.
Yeah.
I'm a very visual person. If there's, like, a history dump, it gets lost in translation. But we learn that also whenever she mentions it, but then also in Silver Flames, whenever Nesta and Cassian go to the prison to find the harp is resting in the center of an eight-pointed star.
It sure is. Yeah, no, they're definitely connected. There's something there for sure. I agree.
Because also in the third book, it is revealed that the horn is also part of the trove. Or a new trove.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, either the trove or a separate trove itself. Yes, agreed.
Which That's is all wild. By starborn people.
It sure is. And that is where we end today, my friends. Thank you for entering the House of Theories and Lore with us. If you have comments, thoughts, let us know. And we will see you next week for our next set of chapters. Thanks for hanging out with us again, guys. I'm Dallas.
I'm Madison.
And this was the Goodish Girls. We'll see you later. Can't get enough of the Goodish Girls? Follow us on social media for sneak peeks at our upcoming episodes and bonus content.
Whether it's slots or live dealers, SpinQuest.com has the fun and action you're looking for with SpinQuest exclusives, blackjack, roulette, baccarat, and even live dice with craps and bubble craps. The games never stop, so you don't have to. And right now, new users get $30 coin packs for just $10. Play now at SpinQuest.com.
SpinQuest is a free-to-play social casino. Void where prohibited. Visit SpinQuest.com for more details.
Hello, America. It's your new favorite podcast here.
Yes, it's James and Andy, two-fourths of the British podcast No Such Thing as a Fish.
That's right. We do facts. We do weird facts, fun facts, facts you've never heard before. James, give us a fact.
Did you know you may be able to cure chronically blocked noses with a snot transplant?
Lovely, lovely facts.
If you want to hear us, go to wherever you get your podcasts and search for No Such Thing as a Fish.
That's right. We'll see you there.